The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 4, text number 34, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on December 24, 2006, in Sydney, Australia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Tadvidipanipatena paripashnena sevaya. Upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinah. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Just try to learn the truth by approaching a spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively and render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. Purport. The path of spiritual realization is undoubtedly difficult. The Lord therefore advises us to approach a bona fide spiritual master in the line of disciplic succession from the Lord Himself. No one can be a bona fide spiritual master without following this principle of disciplic succession. The Lord is the original spiritual master in the disciplic succession. And a person, the Lord is the original spiritual master, and a person in the disciplic succession can convey the message of the Lord as it is to his disciple. No one can be spiritually realized by manufacturing his own process, as is the fashion of the foolish pretenders. This Bhagavatam, rather the Srimad Bhagavatam 6.3.19 says, Dharmam tu sakshad bhagavat pranitam. The path of religion is directly enunciated by the Lord. Therefore, mental speculation or dry arguments cannot help lead one to the right path. Nor by independent study of books of knowledge can one progress in spiritual life. One has to approach a bona fide spiritual master to receive the knowledge. Such a spiritual master should be accepted in full surrender, and one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant, without false prestige. Satisfaction of the self-realized spiritual master is the secret of advancement in spiritual life. Inquiries and submission constitute the proper combination for spiritual understanding. Unless there is submission and service, inquiries from the learned spiritual master will not be effective. One must be able to pass the test of the spiritual master. And when he sees the genuine desire of the disciple, he automatically blesses the disciple with genuine spiritual understanding. In this verse, both blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. Not only should one hear submissively from the spiritual master, but one must also get a clear understanding from him in submission and service and inquiries. A bona fide spiritual master is by nature very kind toward the disciple. Therefore, when the student is submissive and is always ready to render service, the reciprocation of knowledge and inquiries becomes perfect. Om Agyana Timanandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam rupa kada mayam dadati smapadantikam. So sometimes we think, I would like to be Krishna conscious, but I don't want to take a spiritual master because then I have to surrender more. I'll just be Krishna conscious on my own. That way I have some independence to do this and do that, whatever I feel like doing. But if I have a guru, then I have to do whatever he tells me. You see? Actually, I was thinking that way when I first moved into the ashram back in 1971. That Krishna consciousness is very nice. I will be a devotee of Krishna. I will chant. I will follow these principles. But surrendering to the spiritual master, no. So then the devotees told me, they said that Krishna says you have to surrender to the spiritual master. So how you can claim to be a devotee of Krishna if you're not going to surrender to the spiritual master? You're disobeying Krishna. Well, I was defeated by their argument. But you know what? I was stubborn. Even though I was defeated, intellectually I couldn't say anything, still I wouldn't do it. I was just stubborn. But then one day, while I was doing some devotional service in the temple, I had a powerful realization which totally transformed my eternal existence. I was hearing the devotees on one recording singing to Prabhupada. Samsaradava nalalita loka tranayakar yunaganaganatamam praptashakalyana Gunanavasya Vande Guroshi Chadanaravinam. And I heard the love in the devotees' hearts. It came through their voices. Singing is a very wonderful way to express your inner emotions. So, by hearing the singing of the devotees, I could feel through them the love that they were feeling for their spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. And that love was so beautiful, it was so wonderful, it was so pure and sweet and sublime and serene. There just wasn't enough poetic words to glorify how wonderful that love was that they were feeling and that I was sensing by hearing their voices. And at that moment, I just realized, wouldn't it be beautiful to give my life to Prabhupada? So that's actually when I met Prabhupada. I hadn't seen him yet, but that's, you cannot say I didn't meet him because that's when I gave my life to him. I must have met him within my heart. You see? Because I gave my life to him at that moment. I resolved that, well, if I want to feel this nectar, if I want to taste this sweet rasa, there's only one way to do that, and that is I have to surrender. So I did. All right, I'm ready to surrender. Of course, they had to wait some time. But finally, Prabhupada did recognize my surrender. He accepted me as his disciple. By letter on August 12th, 1971, accepted me as his disciple, Sankarshan Das. So, this is a very, very important thing if you really want to become Krishna conscious. We may, in the beginning, be somewhat stubborn because of our independent natures. But sooner or later, if we really want to become Krishna conscious, purely Krishna conscious, then we have to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master by initiation. It's an essential step. It's confirmed not only in Bhagavad Gita, it is also confirmed in Mundaka Upanishad. Tad vigyanartam sugurum e va vigat chat. Do we have any Sanskrit scholars here who know Sanskrit, the different type of verbs? Anyone who studied Sanskrit in the university? Any of you have studied Sanskrit? You've studied. You know the vidhi-lin form of the verb? The compulsory form? Vidhi-lin form of the verb. When the vidhi-lin form of the verb is used, it means must. There's no option. So, gacchat. Gacchat. That is the vidhi-lin form of the word go. It means must go. There's no option. You have to do it. There's no way out. So, in the Mundaka Upanishad, when it describes, if one wants to realize that absolute truth, then eva bhigatschat, must go to Guru. There's no option. It's not like, well, you can if you want. No, absolutely must. You see? Vidhi-lin form of the verb. And if it is further evidenced in the Srimad Bhagavatam, tasmad gurum prabhajeta jigyashu shreya uttamam. If you want to realize that shreya uttamam, the ultimate benefit of existence, then you must take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master by initiation. So, there are two things, shreya and praya. So shreya means that which is ultimately beneficial. Do you want the ultimate benefit of existence? Or would you rather have something left? You can make your own decision. No one is going to force you. But you decide, do you want the ultimate benefit of existence? Existence you have. By the grace of God, you exist. That is the fact. By the grace of God, you exist. Now, do you want the ultimate benefit of your existence? Or would you rather have something less? Just like if you have some inheritance, and then you're asked, do you want the full inheritance or do you want something less? What will you take? Do you want the full inheritance? Yeah. So, we have an inheritance given by God, Shreya Uttamam, the ultimate benefit. And if you want to get the ultimate benefit, then the formula is, you take shelter, the bona fide spiritual master, by initiation. Which means you seek out the bona fide spiritual master. You hear from him, you make submissive inquiries and rendering service. This simple method given here in this verse by Krishna puts you in a position where the spiritual master can reveal to you the same transcendental knowledge that he has realized. That realization that he has, you can also have it. This formula is very powerful. This formula is very effective. This process works. Some people say, well, it doesn't work, so I'm going away. But that means they didn't work the process. If you work the process works. H2O equals water. If the student goes to the laboratory and he tries to make water with two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen and he's not successful, well, if he tells the teacher, this is not a correct formula, H2O equals water, what will the teacher say? No, you didn't do the experiment correctly. That's all. H2O does equal water. It's just your foolishness that you didn't do the experiment properly. Is it? If you follow the instructions of the laboratory manager, laboratory director, the laboratory manual, then you will get the water. I know when I was a student in high school, we did them. We heard in the classroom that H2O equals water, and we went to the chemistry lab, and sure enough, we did it. We took two parts hydrogen and one part oxygen, and there it was, water in the test tube. Wow. It's real. This is real. H2O does equal water. I combine two hydrogen, and there it is. The water's there. You see? So the water of complete total realization of the Absolute Truth is there. And if you follow the formula described here by Krishna, then you will in fact realize it. I am not speaking to you merely some book knowledge. You understand? This is not book knowledge. I am speaking to you from my personal experience. I had a desire to realize the highest truth. And I followed this instruction in this verse. And I realized the highest truth. And if you will also follow the instruction in this verse, you will in turn realize the highest truth. I absolutely guarantee it. Doesn't matter who you are, what you are, where you're from, how old you are, how young you are, what your gender is. Of course, these are all externals. The soul is none of these things. Doesn't matter whether you're academically a genius or a dullard. Simply, you have to be sincere, that's all. If you sincerely want to follow the instructions of Krishna, you will get the result. Krishna's instructions are universal. They work for everyone. Does anyone have any questions? Are you here? Are you somewhere else? You're here? Everyone's here this morning? And see, the mind can carry you away, you know, thinking here, there, everywhere, roaming around the universe. Your body's sitting here, but the mind's going on a little excursion here and there and everywhere. I just wonder if you're really here. You're somewhere else. Because nobody has any questions. I wonder if you heard even one word that I said. Or all you're just sitting here going, you just kind of goes through one ear and out the other. You know, did anything stick? Did anything make sense to you of what I said? Did you hear what I said this morning?
Yes.
Oh, okay, you heard it. That's good. Did any questions come to your mind while you were hearing what I was speaking? Did any questions come to your mind? If so, please share them with us. Yeah.
If we read the same verse of Bhagavad Gita, say it can be second chapter, 10th verse or something, if we read one verse today, it makes some sense to us. And if you read the same verse, say about 2 weeks later, it makes a different sense to us.
Yes.
What is it that gives us a different meaning to us?
Yes. This is what the phenomenon that you are describing is confirmed by Srila Prabhupada. He said that every time you study and discuss the verse, new lights will come out. Because this knowledge is transcendental. And because the ocean of transcendental knowledge has no bottom. You see? No matter how deep you go into this knowledge, you can go deeper and deeper and never hit bottom. You see? So that means every time you study Bhagavad Gita, you can have deeper, more profound, more exciting, more thrilling realizations. And that never stops. It never gets old. In New York City, the New York Times newspaper, the Sunday edition, it is huge. But where does it end up on Monday morning? In the garbage. They don't even read the whole paper. They just read a little here, a little there, and maybe put it in the cat's litter box, you know. It just ends up in the garbage. But this Bhagavad Gita, it was spoken 5,000 years ago, and it's still being studied to this day. In the U.S., there's one famous philosopher. His name was Henry David Thoreau. He's famous for living by a little pond in a little cabin that he built called Walden Pond. And while he was there, he wrote a book about his, it was like a diary of his experience of living in this little cabin in the woods, living very simply. And in this book he said, in the morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which this mundane world and its literature appear to be puny and trivial. So he very nicely appreciated this Henry David Thoreau philosopher. He very nicely appreciated Bhagavad Gita. And he had another friend, Emerson. They were both... It was a period of American philosophy called... They were called the Transcendentalists. It was like in Boston, the Massachusetts area, earlier on, back in the 1800s. And they were studying Vedic wisdom. They didn't have... They came to impersonal understanding because they didn't have the bona fide spiritual master. But they were very, very attracted to the Vedic wisdom. And they were studying different books like Bhagavad Gita, especially Bhagavad Gita. So this knowledge has been read, studied, and Einstein also read Bhagavad Gita. This Bhagavad Gita never wears out. You can study Bhagavad Gita every day for millions of years. And you will get sweeter, more profound nectar out of it every time you go into it. So what you're observing is quite correct. It's absolutely a fact. It's not that you will get a contradictory understanding, but you will get a deeper understanding, a wider, a broader understanding the more that you study it. Any other questions? Yes, okay.
Maharaj, they say when the teacher and the student come together, learning happens. Does it have to be the same teacher? Can I have different gurus?
Guru, the Adi Guru is Krishna. And anyone who purely represents Krishna, he is our guru. There are two types of guru. One is Diksha Guru, the one who initiates you as his disciple. And there is also Siksha Guru. That means an advanced Vaishnava who enlivens and inspires you in your Krishna consciousness. So the Siksha Guru, he will never contradict or tell you something different from your Diksha Guru. Just like Prabhupada is my Diksha Guru, my main Guru. But I can hear from so many other devotees in our movement. Actually, to me, any devotee of ISKCON who is nicely preaching Prabhupada's, nicely repeating and explaining the teachings of Prabhupada, he is Siksha Guru. Just like I was recently in New Govardhan, associating with my dear god brother there, Sababari Prabhu. And I was recently in Sydney speaking with my dear god brother, Atmaram Prabhu. So these Prabhus, they, for me, they are guru also. They are siksha guru. By hearing from them, I feel how they are helping me to come closer and closer to my Diksha Guru, Srila Prabhupada. So any advanced devotee who helps you to come closer to your Guru Maharaj, your initiating spiritual master, he is also understood to be Guru. So we have one initiating Guru, but then we can have millions, an infinite number of instructing gurus who help us to become more and more realized in our relationship with our initiating guru. The main guru is the one who gives you initiation. He is the one who is taking the responsibility to deliver you from the cycle of birth and death. But you will find that there are many siksha gurus who help you in your service to your Diksha Guru. Even the dog is a Siksha Guru. You know that? The dog? Why? Does someone know why the dog is our Siksha Guru? Because he teaches us how to be faithful to the Master by his example. The dog is very faithful to his Master. Even he will risk his life if the master is in a burning house. He will risk his life to try to save the master. And if someone comes to attack the master, he will risk his life also to defend the master. So the dog is very dedicated to the master. So the dog, he is our Siksha Guru also. So we have one Diksha Guru, but many, many Siksha Gurus. Yes.
If we have one Siksha Guru and one Diksha Guru is only one.
Yeah.
So how to prioritize it?
Diksha Guru priority. Not that if the Siksha Guru tells me something different then I follow him. No. You have one authority and that's your initiating spiritual master. That's it. He's your absolute final, he has the final word on everything. Otherwise, if you don't have anyone who's your authority that you fully surrender to, then you're really just surrendered to your own mind. You say, well, I'll take a little from this one, a little here, and I'll do whatever I want. You need to have one person that you fully surrender to. Otherwise, you'll never be able to conquer your mind.
Now, even though I've not taken any initiation, so I have two gurus, Siksha gurus.
Yeah. Well, you have to decide. You have to come to a point where you decide who will be your Diksha Guru. That's up to you to choose. You have to see where is your best way of connecting with Krishna consciousness. You have to ultimately come to a decision. I will accept this person as my initiating guru and fully surrender to him. You finally have to reach that point. You have to come to that point. We should be moving in that direction. Next question. Yes.
Question in ISKCON, some devotees say that Diksha is more important than Siksha, and some other devotees say Siksha is more important.
Okay.
Can you clarify this?
All right. So which is more important, Diksha or Siksha? Actually, Siksha is more important, and I'll explain why. What is Diksha? Diksha is a ceremony. It lasts for a few minutes. What is the ongoing relationship between the master and the disciple? Is it Diksha? No, the Diksha was a ceremony that happened for a few minutes. But the ongoing relationship that brings the disciple closer and closer to Guru and Krishna is Siksha. In other words, my initiating guru, he is giving me siksha. And by obeying his siksha, by meditating on his siksha, By taking his siksha as my very life and soul, that is my spiritual perfection. If someone says, I'm initiated by Prabhupada, therefore I'm saved, but I don't follow his siksha, then he's nowhere. Diksha without siksha is useless. So the siksha or the instructions must be there, they must be accepted. So siksha is more important, but part of the siksha is you must take diksha. You can't say, well, I will just take siksha and I won't take diksha. That means you're not following the siksha. So actually they're both important. They're both ultimately important. Because if you don't take diksha, then you're not following the siksha. So you must take diksha. It's a prime important. Actually, the diksha is simply a reconfirmation of your siksha relationship. It's a contract. It's a siksha contract. That's what it is. It's like your mundane example. You're in love with a girl. You see? And you decide you're really meant for each other. You know, mutual decision. So when does it become contractualized, or whatever the word is? It becomes a formal contract at the wedding ceremony. Now there's no backing out. You see? Now you're stuck. That's it. The contract is there, signed, sealed, and delivered. You can't get out of it now. You see, so diksha is like the wedding ceremony. Now you're eternally bound up with this guru. That's it. Now you're completely bound up by the vow, initiation vow. But why did you take that vow? You took that vow because you were inspired by his siksha and you wanted to dedicate your eternal existence to following his siksha. So the diksha is simply a siksha contract that I will eternally follow your siksha. So they're really very tightly intertwined, diksha and siksha. Yes, you had a question.
Are you a siksha guru or diksha guru?
I am both diksha and siksha guru, both. For my disciples, I am diksha guru. And for my disciples, I am also siksha guru. And for thousands of people all over the world, who are appreciating my humble attempt to spread this movement, I am siksha guru. Guru has two functions, diksha and siksha. The guru is a bona fide spiritual master, is automatically diksha and siksha both. These are two functions of guru. That's all. He gives siksha and he gives diksha. If someone is very serious to make a commitment, a siksha commitment, then that becomes as diksha. When he says, I'm so inspired by your siksha that now I want to fully dedicate myself eternally to following your siksha, all right, then that commitment, that contract between the master and the disciple, that is called diksha. The spiritual master makes the disciple agrees, I will accept your siksha as my life and soul. And the spiritual master says, I then will take full responsibility to deliver you back to home, back to Godhead. Even if I have to take birth again in this material world to do so. You see, he makes the commitment. That is diksha.
So it has nothing to do, siksha has nothing to do with siksha guru and diksha and mantra, just...
No, there's everything to do with each other. They're very closely related, diksha and siksha. It's not the diksha guru, there's a diksha guru who doesn't give siksha. If I take diksha from the spiritual master that never gives me any instructions, then how can I serve his order? The disciple is duty bound to serve the order of his initiating spiritual master. So if the spiritual master doesn't give any orders, then what is the, how that can be even, how there can be a guru disciple relationship? So they are tightly, you cannot really separate. They are tightly connected, diksha and siksha. Yes.
Back to Godhead, hmm? The relation also same.
What is it?
After going back to Godhead, is Goloka Vrindavan, the diksha relation.
Oh yes. The Prabhupada confirms in the Bhagavatam that the spiritual master lives forever by his divine instructions and the disciple lives with him. So, even in the spiritual world, you will know this is my Diksha Guru. Even when you and your Diksha Guru are both there in your visional rasa with Krishna and Krishna's pastime, still you know this gopi or this cowherd boy or whatever. This is my Guru. You will know. And you will have that service relationship eternally with him in the spiritual world also. It's never separated.
But soul is only part and parcel. Every soul is equal in the quality. But
every soul is qualified, yes. Yes, and?
Yeah, it means after going there, it may be a difference. You
know? Oh, there are so many levels of... There is a hierarchy in the spiritual world. There are manjaris, there are assistants to the gopis. There's a whole hierarchy. Servant of the servant. There's a whole hierarchy there. Some are serving, some's the the flute is serving in one way, the gopis are serving in another way. Everyone's doing different types of service. Some are serving the servants, some are serving the servants of the servants of the servant. And everyone is in complete bliss.
Not only spiritual master, other devotees whom we are close to, other devotees, them also we can see there.
Prabhupada said we'll have another ISKCON in the spiritual world. Actually, we have many ISKCON centers around the world. But the way things are going lately, I think the ISKCON Goloka Vrindavan must be our largest center. Because so many devotees have transferred there. Many devotees have transferred to ISKCON. We have many devotees now transferring to ISKCON Goloka Vrindavan. So,
we can meet them.
When we go back to God, it'll be a, you'll say, oh, I'm right at home. ISKCON is here too. Welcome to ISKCON Goloka.
And the soul never loses identification.
Huh?
And the soul will never lose identification.
The soul never loses his identity. Even those who achieve impersonal Brahman realization, they simply have a temporary sense of identitylessness. It's only a sensation, it's not actually a reality. It's like getting hit over the head with a hammer and going into a coma for a while. And you wake up again after a while. The soul never becomes identityless, although he may sometimes have a temporary sense of identitylessness, which is called sayujya mukti. But that sayujya mukti is rejected by the Vaishnavas as being worse than hell. I just explained, it is not actual identitylessness. It is simply a sensation of identitylessness. You think you don't exist. Of course, you can't think that you don't exist because you're thinking. It's kind of a contradictory thing, really.
So we're not trying to merge into anything. No, he's still the Brahma Jyoti or...
You have a temporary sense of being merged in the Brahma Jyoti.
But then the there is no actual merging, is it?
There is some kind of merging. But you still have your identity. Your sense of identity is in a state of suspended animation, like hibernation. Okay? But you come out of it. Aruya krichchena parang padam tata patanchyato nadrita yushmadangraya. Bhagavatam explains that even those who merge into Brahman, patantiyadho, they fall down again. Because they never developed an attraction for the lotus feet of the Lord. And then the verse goes on to explain vimukti maninas, which means liberation in the mind only. They think themselves liberated, but actually they're not. We cannot allow ourselves to be pulled into this trap, because they come down again to material existence. It's possible that someone who merges in Brahman could go beyond, further than that and achieve the planet, you know, achieve a personal liberation. But that's very rare. That's very, very difficult. Because there's no scope for engaging in devotional service in Brahman. You need some practical service. So the best thing is, instead of taking the very difficult pathway of impersonal liberation, which requires you don't even pass semana once in your entire life, and it's a very intense program. Bhagavatam says, krishchena, with great difficulty, they merge into Brahman. So why go through such intense austerities when it's only a temporary liberation? Better to take up Krishna consciousness. So you were saying?
I was saying, is it like something, there is no actual merge? Like,
yes, there's no actual merge. It's a sensation of merging. I'm explaining very carefully and clearly this point.
Just like the example of the green bird entering the tree.
Yes, that's right. It appears that there is no bird, it's just the tree. But actually, if you look very, very closely, you'll see, oh, there's a green parrot sitting there. That's right. The jiva doesn't go into a state of non-existence. It's just a sensation of non-existence. As I gave the example, you get hit over the head with a hammer, and you go into a deep coma. I gave the example very clearly. It's only a sensation of non-existence. It's not actual non-existence. And then after some time, you come out of that sensation of non-existence. You can't really assert the state of non-existence, because then you're contradicting yourself. If you say, I don't exist, then I'm just a figment of my own imagination. You see, that doesn't make sense. How you can imagine that you exist? If you look at this impersonal philosophy, it just completely falls apart. They say that actually you don't have an individual existence. It's an illusion. So how you can have an illusion if you don't exist? How you can have the illusion of individuality if there's no individual to even have the illusion? You understand? It's absurd. It's preposterous. It's asinine, this impersonal philosophy.
But Maharaj, they say while we are on this material planet, we should aspire for the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, which then, after leaving this planet, will take us to the closer to the personal form of Godhead.
The impersonal Brahman is not the... It's very difficult to go from impersonal Brahman to personal realization. And that's why Bhagavatam says they fall down in this material existence. Patanti adho, Bhagavatam says. They fall down again to material existence. Why? Because it says they have no attachment to Krishna's lotus feet. The pathway back to home, back to Godhead, is while here on this planet, directly take the devotional service. That is the pathway. The chances are that if you try to go through impersonal Brahman, you won't. The odds are against you of being able to progress from impersonal Brahman to personal realization. So the best thing is you just take directly to devotional service now. Why do you want to take to impersonal Brahman when it's very difficult and the result is only temporary and then you have to come back again here anyway to be caught up in sense gratification again? Why not just go directly to devotional service? Why do you want to go the other way? Why not, if your nose itches, just scratch it? Why do you want it to go like this? You might pull your muscles. Strain a muscle, you know. I'm just trying to stretch your arm. Why go the difficult way? Why not take directly to devotional service? Achieve the perfection of existence right here, right now. Why do you want to postpone Janma Karma? What is that verse? That after many births and deaths, Vasudeva Sarvamati Sa Mahatma Sudurlava. Huh? Jananam Pun. Bahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Mangupanyate Vasudeva Sarvamati Sa Mahatma Sudurlava. Only after many, many births and deaths, those persons are on the pathway of jnana and personal progress. After many, many births and deaths, they finally come to the point of realizing that Vasudeva is everything and they surrender. So why do you want to go through many births and deaths? Suffering. Sometimes as a human being, sometimes as a dog, sometimes as a cat, sometimes as a... what is it? Kookaburra bird, you see. Why do you want to go through all of these births and deaths? Are you masochistic? You see? You want to punish yourself. Why not immediately take to devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead? They say, well, it couldn't be that easy. Well, the bhakti path may appear to be very easy, singing and dancing and feasting. But to actually strictly follow this pathway requires great determination, great focus of mind. Yes?
In this age of quarrel and chaos, Kali Yuga, where our lifespan is short, how can we do as much service as possible?
As much service as possible.
Such a short time.
So, you simply have to be 24 hours a day engaged in service, that's all. Make sure that every minute of your 24 hours is engaged in devotional service. That's the way. Don't waste a single moment. Rupa Goswami is instructed, do not waste a single moment. See, Prabhupada said, always be engaged in doing service. That's the key. You have to see them always doing devotional service. You should be always looking at yourself. Am I doing service now? There are 9 different ways of serving Krishna. Nava Vidha Bhakti. Hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers. The list is given by Prahlad Maharaj. So you have to see, am I always doing at least one of these 9 activities? Don't waste a single moment in sense gratification. 24 hours a day is not enough time to serve Krishna. We want more time. So whatever time we do have, we don't want to waste a single second. Always be vigilant. Is this devotional service that I'm doing right now? And if it's not, stop it and start doing devotional service instead.
Referring back to the discussion about initiation process, I would like to affirm, is it that one's commitment, the devotee's commitment to himself seriously, is what you mean by to to ISKCON is what you mean by initiation?
Initiation means that I meet one devotee who I understand this devotee is fixed solidly in Krishna consciousness. He is Krishna conscious. This devotee has the potency and the power to deliver me from the cycle of birth and death. Therefore, I want to fully surrender myself to him as his disciple. I give myself completely to him. And then I take initiation to reconfirm. That is, the initiation is a vow that now I am your eternal disciple. Whatever order you give me, I will follow. I am simply your eternal servant. You're totally giving yourself to that particular devotee to be his servant for all of eternity. That's initiation. So you have to have a lot of trust and faith in that individual to be able to do that. That this person will not cheat me. He will not exploit me. This person is free of the tendency for sense gratification. That's why it's enjoined that one should take some time to study his qualities and characteristics and make sure he's actually pure, not just a show. Make sure he's genuine. It is enjoined that one should study this. The guru must study the prospective disciple to make sure that he's genuine. And the disciple also must study the prospective guru to make sure that he is genuine. It's a very important decision that this person will be my spiritual master. I will fully give myself to him. It's the most important decision you ever make in your life, just choosing who your spiritual master will be. So one should be very careful, very judicious in the way that one goes about it.
In this case, we are something expecting this person is takes to mean back to Godhead. That is the reason I have to surrender to this person.
Yeah.
But in spiritually, we should not expect anything. No? So here we are expecting something. Is it how much it is good?
We should not expect.
Here.
In spiritual life, we should not expect anything?
Yeah. Means we should surrender completely. But here, accepting a spiritual master, we are expecting that we are going to back to Godhead. That is the reason I am surrendering to this person.
Yes, that's, your point is valid. Your point is valid. The advanced understanding, of course there's nothing wrong with thinking that way, but the advanced understanding, because it is Sat Prabhupada, I have one time read, I have not been able to find it again, but I read in the Bhagavatam purport, the desire to go back to Godhead is in the mode of goodness. But actually, the pure devotee, he says, Prabhu say, Janme Janme Prabhu say, you are my Lord birth after birth. So actually, the disciple, in the beginning, he's thinking, I got to get out of this miserable material world, I got to go back to God. And that's very good to think that way. That helps us. But when one becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness realization, you realize that actually, it doesn't matter. I can serve Krishna here or there. It's the same thing. So that's why we sing in our Guru Puja prayers, Prabhu, Janme, Janme, Prabhu, say. We sing to our Guru Maharaj that you are my Lord birth after birth. Even if I take birth after birth, that's all right. I just want to serve you. The disciple does not say, I will be your disciple if you will take me back to God. No. The disciple, he unconditionally surrenders to the spiritual master. I just want to give myself fully to you because you are Krishna's pure devotee, his representative, and this is my duty. Krishna wants me to surrender to his... Krishna will not accept my service unless I surrender to his devotee. So therefore, I have to find out who is that devotee I will fully surrender to so Krishna will accept my service. I want Krishna to accept my service. That expectation you can have. I want to serve in such a way that Krishna will be pleased with me. That desire. I want to become dear to Krishna. I want to please him. That is transcendental. That is not fruitive. So Krishna wants me to serve him through the medium of his representative, the spiritual master. So therefore I must find out who will be my spiritual master so that I can surrender to him. So that I can please Krishna. Now going back to home, back to Godhead, that loses its importance. In the beginning, that's a motivation for us. I want to get out of this hellish material existence. But when you begin to wake up in Krishna consciousness, you feel that you're already in the spiritual world. Bhakti is beyond moksha. It is beyond liberation. So once you actually enter into bhakti spirit, then it doesn't matter anymore, going back to God and taking birth again. Whatever Krishna wants, that's all. Whatever Krishna wants is all right. Whatever Krishna does with me is all right. I don't care. I just want to remain in his service, that's all. I just want to keep serving my guru and Krishna. If they want me to serve him in Golok, that's all right. I want me to serve in Australia, and, you know, want me to serve in Baghdad, you know, wherever. Just let me always be engaged in serving my guru and Krishna. That's a good point you brought up. Yes.
Why is it so difficult to go back to Godhead from impersonal Brahman?
We explain that, but we'll elaborate. In impersonal Brahman, there's no scope for devotional service. There's no conception of one's individual existence. There's no conception of God's personal existence. So, devotional service, which is what is required to liberate us, requires three things. The lover, the beloved, and the love. You see? There's the one who offers the devotion, one who receives the devotion, and the devotion. Three things are required. Impersonal Brahman is devoid of all three. There's no concept of the person to whom you offer your love, nor is there a concept of the person who offers the love, and therefore there's also no concept of love at all. It's just oneness. That's it. So practically speaking, it's impossible to get from that Brahmajyoti to Bhagavan realization. However, in some rare case it could be possible. But it is extremely rare, and one should not think, well, I will be the exception to the rule. I really would like to merge with Brahman because that's the way I was trained. I want to go ahead and follow that pathway. I'll merge into Brahman. And then from there, I'll go back to home, back to Godhead. No, do not think like that. You will not be able to attain Brahman. If you want to attain Brahman, you can't go to a mundane university. You can't have a job in a mundane corporation. You simply have to have never passed Samana, and simply live an austere life, not eating very nicely, never seeing the face of a woman, very, very austere, and simply study Vedanta Sutra. Do all kinds of very rigorous austerities, which are not practical. So don't think, I will merge with Brahman, and then I will go from there back to going back to Godhead. No. Don't think like that. Simply take up devotional service. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So, we have only 5 minutes left. Yes.
One of the offenses of chanting the holy name is not to preach to faithless persons.
Yes.
But then when devotees go out and they preach, most of the time they encounter people who are faithless.
Yeah. Yes. So, it is enjoined not to preach to the faithless. So that means you should only, of course, in one sense, in this material world, everyone's faithless here. So if we were to understand that statement in an extreme way, we We couldn't preach at all, practically speaking. From another angle, however, actually, at some level, everyone has faith deep within. So actually, everyone has a combination, divine and demoniac nature. Everyone has a mix. So what that really means in practical terms is, when you deal with someone, you deal with them to that point where they can actually manifest faithfulness. And you don't go into that, you don't take them higher into that, you don't go beyond their limit to where they express faithlessness and blasphemous statements. This requires expertise. An expert preacher is able to find that part of that person which actually he's able to connect with their faithful aspect of their nature. You see? He's able to find that spark of faithfulness within them and connect with that and encourage that so that a fire of faith begins to ignite in that person's heart, which can then burn away all the faithlessness that the Kali Yuga has imposed upon them. Everyone is actually a pure devotee of Krishna, every single jiva, but he is covered by the influence of the material nature. So everyone has faithfulness there. Not preaching to the faithless means don't preach to people in such a way that you stimulate their atheistic nature. You have to stimulate their theistic nature by the way you deal with them. And the real key, the one word key of how to do that is the word compassion. In this age, everyone's trying to exploit me, try to take advantage of me for sense gratification. How many people are actually compassionate? You see. A preacher is very, very compassionate. And people can sense that this person is different. There's something about this person that's different that inspires people when they meet a person who is genuinely compassionate. That inspires faith within their heart. So not preaching to the faithless means you one has to be very expert. You have to know what you can tell someone and what you cannot tell them. So there's only one way to learn the art of doing that is to get out and try your best. Everyone should try to distribute books. Everyone should try to preach. Because in this way you will learn by practical experience, Krishna from within the heart will help you also when he sees you're sincerely trying to spread the rays of the benediction moon. He will help you. He will help you learn how to reach out and inspire the faithful aspect of a person. So he becomes stronger in this faithful aspect and weaker in his faithless aspect. Does that make sense to you? Okay, so our time is up now, and so we will stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.